Welcome to the ANews podcast. This is episode 96. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org.
Editorial on relationships. The new year is only a few days off, and with it, we are wishing our best to the year of 2018, as we wave so long in the rearview mirror. I'm not sure about you, but I, for one, welcome the new year, however picayune it may actually be. Party this January. Pizza, that is. The day's off, reflecting on another year of life, of music, of texts, and projects, seems like a nice way to round everything off. Create ideas and plans for the new year, for the coming years, although I'm not really sure if I have a five-year plan, as mentioned by some on this podcast. At least, not something deemed such. More like a life project, where the years aren't that important, but perhaps that's because I'll be over the hill anarchist by then. Always in it for the long run. This has been a year of many things, but for this editorial, let's take a look and see what we can learn from some events that happened over this past year, all culminating together last weekend or so. We're talking about relationships, exclusion, the shutdown of discussions and government, platforming and deplatforming, a lack of critical thinking, the cult of personality, and a dogmatic groupthink. We're talking about the life and death of Dr. Bones. Dr. Bones was a relative new kid on the block these last few years, a proverbial man from Florida, as the popular saying goes for the weird shit that often goes on there. They were the self-styled gonzo journalist in the likeness of Hunter S. Thompson, who quickly launched themselves into the limelight of egoism and left. They had all the best friends, from the most popular Antifa writers to a handful of loyal Twitter followers willing to pay him money for each month via Patreon to help his living expenses. Obviously, I'm doing something wrong here. Dr. Bones wrote desperate and offensive attacks against Wolfie, Little Black Cart, AnarchistNews.org, and friends that really made a name for them among people who are against those kind of things. Famously, the Blocked by Bones Club on Twitter sprung up of people who they would block who disagreed with them, like the pinnacle of blissful ignorance, or an ungrateful little prick who doesn't even have a third grade reading level of critique. They co-hosted the now-defunct Love and Solidarity, Rest in Power, Comrade, the Guillotine podcast with a Maoist while trying to hype everything to the next level, often careless of what they were actually saying or thinking, as in one breath they would praise Antifa fighting against the alt-right and government, and in the next breath praise to the state and government of Cuba. Laugh out fucking loud. What anarchist in their right mind could listen to this absurdity without calling out their support for El Comandante and Dr. Che? Apparently, not enough, as it became the larger-than-life figure of radical left Twitter, or whatever that means. In the end, Dr. Bones wasn't brought down by their ideas, writings, or political acts, but rather by the relationships they formed outside of their public appearance. The cult of personality all came crumbling down last weekend or so, as another Twitter user revealed their relationship to Dr. Bones for all the public to read and digest. Dr. Bones was found guilty of, quote, to have been grooming one of our comrades for sexual favors, as well as objectifying trans sex workers, drink driving, and other assorted shitty behaviors, unquote, from the Guillotine. Dr. Bones followed up by calling it quits, vowing to never write anything again, and basically deleted their website, Patreon, Twitter, and whatever else. The publisher of their book, Gods and Radicals, who they previously severed ties with over eco-extremism some months earlier, also pulled all of their books from distro. Why not after the eco-extremism tirade, though? Along with various other anarchist-friendly bookstores around the USA. A quick search online today revealed that I couldn't find their book for sale anywhere. Hopefully it doesn't become a giant commodity icon. selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars down the road, like the recent Crime Think children's book from years ago turned out to be. Antiques Roadshow. Shout out. On Anarchist Justice, we don't wish to publicize crimes over the internet and put people in danger, but how else could this have played out? Could be a good starting point, perhaps on a more local level, but the actors involved are states away from each other, and quite frankly, as much as I despised Dr. Bones before, I'd like to see less anarchists and their friends put up against the Twitter firing squad, although we may find it funny, as one wrote on Twitter, quote, if someone could collect Dr. Bones' tears and put a hex on them for us, unquote. On a different scale, but related, this sense of public callouts played out recently in the northeast of the USA, when a well-known anarchist organizer, think Black Rose Anarchist Federation, resigned from their job over allegations of sexual misconduct and emotional abuse to their former partners. Who knows what happened internally, and thank you, but they just quit their job over some relationship stuff from the early 2000s and 2010s and got banned from a local anarchist hangout. Originally, it was publicized over social media, and eventually it made its way to the newsprint of the local paper the same week Dr. Bones quit. On giving up so easily, did it ever really matter to Dr. Bones? It doesn't seem so. Although from who they appeared to be, it seems like they're simply acting out the social norms of their peers. As unfortunate as it may be, this is what the majority of people do in these type of situations. Perhaps this says more about the people who were Dr. Bones aficionados rather than actual anarchists in it for the long run. But it is still intriguing and hopefully a note-taken. The way in which we build and destroy relationships, deal with drama and tragedy, is exactly who we are as anarchists. For some, it's all they've ever known. Happy 2K19, everyone!
I feel so alone. Gonna end up a big old pile of
ashes. What's new this week? Decolonize the Frontiers, the Mississippi Delta, from Black Rose Federation by the BRRN Radical Ecology Committee. This is an in-depth piece of reporting that seems more like a crime think piece than one from the barely anarchist Black Roseists. Lots of history, layers of race and land, perhaps a bit less rah-rah activism, but insert even more boring organizational politics. But the political analysis seems like it's mostly in the conclusion, so avoidable. Quote, as negative value continues to destabilize capital accumulation, a new emancipatory politics is emerging to address transformation in which land, food, water, labor, and all of life is given alternative valuation. In contrast to the capitalist technologies that exhaust their raw materials supply and produce overpollution by their tendency to fill up waste frontiers before locating new ones, what? Class struggles like decolonial anti-pipeline movements create, quote, choke points, unquote, in capital commodity chains on the territorial level. These, quote, choke points, unquote, can become important contested sites to build broader class struggle movements, unquote.
Alan Maximoyne, 1957 to 2018, rest in power, from Anarchismo. A, I have never heard of this person before. B, I loathe the phrase rest in power with an inappropriate passion. C, there are too many typos in this write-up. D, I have a cold, and so I'm crankier than I need to be. Quote, his generosity with his time meant he frequently played quite a central role, particularly in those years when the numbers of people willing to take a public stand on abortion access or Garda brutality were few. Even in his mid-50s, Alan refused to be intimidated and held his ground when the Garda attacked an anti-capitalist demonstration outside the Shelburne Hotel in 2011. He was an inspiring figure for those of us who were younger and drawn towards anarchism, but had little experience in its practice. Alan demonstrated that being an anarchist was being an activist, an active trade unionist, a campaigner, a writer, an historian, and crucially, an organizer, unquote. Perhaps I would have liked him if I met him?
Would Human Extinction Be a Tragedy? From the New York Times by Todd May, who is a philosophy consultant for the TV show The Good Place, which some of us find amusing. Perhaps someone dared Todd May to write a satire of how philosophers talk. All this piece lacks to get an A in that effort is lots of citations of other thinkers. But this has the yes and no that is entirely predictable, and the appeal to reason and art that are the only things May could come up with on the yes side. Also, the assumptions about what non-human animals are capable of. I get it, this is for the New York Times in the era of Trump. Moving on.
Trump's Betrayal of YPG, Paris Commune Falls Again? By David Van Dusen, District Vice President of the AFL-CIO. Van Dusen is a nice guy, but OMG this piece. From things like talking about Trump are, quote, so-called president, unquote. Yes, dude, he's the fucking president. Really? You're questioning the validity of his presidency and not the existence of any president ever? To the final lines, quote, and no matter how America got there, once America leaves, Trump will own the history that follows. If the Paris Commune must fall again, let it be known that the invaders were enabled by a country which once called itself great, unquote. This entire article is an exercise in not my anarchism slash, is it even anyone's?
Fourth Libertarian Spring Workshop La Habana, Cuba. From ABRA, the website for a social center and libertarian library, translated by the collective member. Quote, the Libertarian Spring Workshop in La Habana is being offered as an incitement of needs, of collaborations, of practice, of libertarian struggles in related fields, in order to break with the walls of containment that prevent us from seeing a life of irascible interconnections. Please send your proposals for activities, topics to discuss, and possible spaces you can help out with during the conference. We're trying to organize everything now, unquote.
Abolition Media Worldwide official announcement. Announcing a new website, apparently in competition with It's Going Down. It's another news site with no comments allowed, with the goal of revolution and with a permeable membrane for filtering content. Quote, Abolition Media Worldwide is an online news source for revolutionary movements, with information about militant actions, analysis, and features about local struggles from around the world. Abolition Media is here to draw a clear line that separates anti-state struggle from annihilation. AMW stands in stark contrast to corporate and capitalist media, which push the disastrous agendas of nation-states. More than just a news source, AMW intends to be a tool for movements dedicated to anarchist, abolitionist, and revolutionary perspectives. Our mission is to connect these ideas with the public, to make often obscured positions clear, unquote. If that last bit means that they think other anarchist sites are too jargony, then I have to say it's not off to a great start. We will see.
R.I.P. anarchist historian Osvaldo Bayer, from Freedom News UK, a short and uninspired note about Bayer's death, although probably more will come soon, or perhaps more will be translated into English soon. Bayer is the author of some of the historical biographies put out by Elephant Editions, of inspiring yet under-recognized folks like Severino Di Giovanni, in Anarchism and Violence, and Simon Radowitzky. A solid entry in the anarchist historian list that also includes Barry Pateman of the Kate Sharpley Library and the better-known Paul Average.
Days of Rage Patches, Eco-Anarchist and Standing Rock Prisoner Support Project. 100% of the proceeds go to prisoners. Vegan, post-left, all the good things.
Aiming at Ghosts on the Limited Usefulness of a Critique of 19th Century Syndicalism, from It's Going Down, by, quote, a tired old workerist dinosaur, unquote. This is a response to the piece just last week called Nothing to Syndicate, and because I'm not going to get into the hole with these two people who are arguing about what they seem to agree is not worth arguing about, dig, 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 instead I'm going to bring up the other issue this article raises, which is argument by hyperlink. This article is full of hyperlinks. Frequently, there are multiple in a sentence. And to me, it really points out the limitations of hyperlinks, or bad usage of footnotes for the old school version, as replacements for a thoughtful argument. If you're trying to prove a point, then sending me to multiple other sites and other articles in which your argument might or might not be made, much less apparent, is a sloppy and lazy technique. It does not convince me of your points, and it doesn't make you seem knowledgeable. I just got a new pair of glasses, and I'm feeling particularly schoolmarmy, can you tell? But really, people, if the article slash rebuttal is worth writing, then do your arguments justice.
Radio Silence, on the end of Radio Klaxon, the Zad's pirate radio. From It's Going Down. Yet another tale of how hard it is to understand what is happening on the ground in other places. Okay, let's be real. Frequently, it's hard to have a holistic sense of events even when in the midst of them. This is the signing off of the folks who've been running the pirate radio for Zad. Their letter accuses other Zadists of power grabs, but doesn't try to explain too much. They also post a letter by these power seekers, a prettified version of why the radio folks are leaving, and the difference between the two letters pretty much speaks for itself. Good tactic. This conflict is another lens on the kind of internal disagreements and disconnects that are probably happening inside the Yellow Vests, to mention just one topical controversy, although the internal divides are along different lines, no doubt. Need a TL/DR? Don't think you know what is going on in places foreign to you, like Dr. Bones' head, among others.
10 Lessons from the Yellow Vests from It's Going Down by Etienne Delay on behalf of RED, i.e. the Radical Education Department. This piece extols the virtues of the Yellow Vests, encouraging anarchists to, quote, learn and participate, not admonish and preach, unquote. There is stuff of value in this piece, even if it is oddly positive about a deeply conflicted series of events, a positivity that is triggering to some of us veterans of activism. It discusses a change in tactics, how the Yellow Vests are appropriately changing tactics from occupations to savage marches, the significance of timing and the seasons, etc. Quote, there has recently been an increasing consensus around a central issue on the part of the Yellow Vests, which has been described as the demand including all other demands, the citizen-initiated referendum. Aimed at giving real political power to the people, it would inscribe within the Constitution the possibility of public referenda that could establish or abolish laws and remove elected officials from office. Instead of simply relying on piecemeal concessions from the government, such as the dismal increase in the minimum wage promised by Macron, the citizen-initiated referendum would allow the movement to restructure the governmental power dynamic and, at least in principle, accomplish all its popular demands over time. Unquote. We'll just ignore that unironic reference to the people, shall we? Then, in the comment thread, there was a post apparently from a French person calling out the author, and Americans in general, for getting excited about fascist movements in other places. I'm sympathetic, but the poster doesn't give a ton of information, so I'll just stay over here in my corner of bemusement.
Sad Radicals from Quillette by Connor Barnes. Quillette calls itself, quote, a platform for free thought. We respect ideas, even dangerous ones. We also believe that free expression and the free exchange of ideas help human societies flourish and progress, unquote. I'm going to go ahead and call this mainstream media. The article, however, is not terrible. An ex-radical person dissects the issues with the radical communities he was in or in touch with along lines that will ring true to many. The author brings up faith, how radical politics mimics religion, fear, how radical politics provides answers to fearful people, the overemphasis on criticism, how radicals select for particular personality types, and so on. He doesn't get anything out of the book Joyful Militancy, which is addressing some of the same issues that he's talking about, and that, more than anything, makes me think that Connor is more interested in distancing himself from youthful hijinks than he is in better understanding radicals and communities. Also, as one commenter said in that thread, quote, you get lost in subcultures for a few years, apparently investing your sense of identity far too heavily in them, then you turn around and blame Marx and Foucault? What the fuck? Blame yourself, asshole. Lol. Get better at picking your friends. They're shitty, manipulative people everywhere, and the opposite is also true. Unquote.
Cedar updates. New mailing address. From Anon. Cedar is one of the folks doing time for being framed for the Lock Street affair. Quote, Cedar has been transferred from Barton Jail in Hamilton to Vanier Center for Women in Milton, where they will serve the duration of their sentence. While there, they would love to receive mail from people, friends and strangers alike. Unquote. The mail address is given and the support website also. Write an anarchist prisoner today.
Audio. Soulcast with time on rep, journalism, empathy, and anarchy. From soul1.org. An hour and a half. Time is the rap name of a friend of Soul's for anyone confused by the headline. Soul has changed his opening noise from oh yeah to booyah. The interview starts 6 minutes in, so if Soul's wigger affect bugs you, then you can cut out the intro. The interview is two white guys talking from pretty much the same place geographically and culturally. They talk about becoming anarchists, Denver, race, journalism, making music, and they both have podcasts. If you're interested in that, then listen. I get disturbed by how much these folks sound like Modesto Anarcho and Kevin Tucker, and your mileage may vary.
Anarchy Radio, an hour. Apparently the lack of a show last week was for technical reasons, which seems remarkably convenient. The one episode that Jay-Z gets criticized by someone he doesn't want to just blow off, and the episode disappears. Magic. Anyway, he does his normal thing this week of cherry-picking what Rotten said in last week's call, and represents himself as all things reasonable. Com/explains that an hour is not long enough to have a solid conversation. Surely Jay-Z could refute every point if there were only enough time. And then moves on. Most of this episode is Jay-Z reading, including from his upcoming piece in Fifth Estate.
Topic of the week: grooming. Today, I was talking with some people about a term that has been around for a while, but that's been gaining attention: grooming. It is another word in the terrain of socializing sexuality predation that has a specific meaning, but that is also easily generalizable beyond clarity. The vanilla description of grooming is to prepare someone for an objective, like she's getting groomed to be a candidate. But it is commonly used also for pedophiles who prep a targeted child for sexual attention. And now the term is spreading beyond pedophiles to sexual predators of other sorts. So, at the risk of this blowing up into a flame situation, what is the difference between seduction as either a positive or at least a neutral activity, and grooming, by definition a bad thing, and flirting? How does an actively dating person know if what they're doing, specific actions they're taking, a specific person they're interested in, are appropriate? When half the excitement of meeting and flirting with new people is the fact that they're new, that is, they haven't been interviewed ahead of time to gauge what they hate, what they're afraid of, what bad experiences they've had, etc. Dating rules are changing so fast from this old non-dater's perspective, and how are people supposed to know whether they're hurting someone? So, here we go.
Okay, so for me, first of all, having dating rules, it sounds a little bit awkward because each relation is a different relation. And it's part of like knowing the person, knowing the things that he or she or they may like or not. And so I have a hard time understanding how these grooming things would apply, at least for grown-up people. I'm not going to talk about this in terms of kids because it would be a different approach. There were other things involved, but I have a hard time. I understand that sometimes we do bad choices and we regret about them, and sometimes we have a little bit of a hard time dealing with some people, but I don't know how you can apply this kind of concept when two people are wanting to meet each other, or at least one of them. Of course that I have an objective, a goal when I'm interested in some person. So let's say I see a person that I find cute and I'm trying to see, oh, maybe this person is into me, let me try this. So yeah, like I have a goal. I want to maybe date, have sex with this person or something, and it may happen or it may not. It also depends on what the person wants. And unless I'm physically imposing something on the person, I consider that this other person can always say, no, stop, I don't want, get out, you are too annoying, you are too needy, you are too something, I don't want you in my life. Otherwise, for me, the thing is, I don't know what the other person thinks, so I need this person to tell me. And I consider that grown-ups are all capable of doing this. And if they are not, it's something that they might consider, and it happens in our society, but they might consider talk to somebody, even professionally or not. And I don't know, look...
But it seems like you're assuming informed consent. And the grooming thing seems to be a sort of like a different way to talk about the question of informed consent. So, you know, the reason, of course, we're talking about this is because of the Dr. Bones controversy from last week. And implied in the criticism there was that the power differential was so great that both of the people were not at the same level of consent.
Yeah. This I also have a hard time to understand. Can I keep talking? Okay, because like I was reading a book, a literature, a couple of years ago, and there was this story about in the US how it was a story of a professor. He entered his classroom and he looked up in the ceiling because he didn't want to be accused of any kind of sexual harassment or looking to girls' boobs or something like this. And
boobs.
Yeah.
Take a shot.
So why can't a professor be interested in somebody else? And if there is a game, I think it's a game that two people are playing, because also like the student can play the game of maybe interested in getting higher in her career, dating a professor, but it's on them to figure it out. And of course, if like let's say a professor is using this to as a threat, then the person needs to come up and say, stop, you are using it, but not saying that because they had a relationship, because they were flirting, I can't understand it as a, like, because I don't respect higher positions. I treat everybody as equal. Like, it doesn't matter if it's my professor or if it's, they are people like me.
Sure. So but that's a healthy anarchist outlook. Most people don't have that outlook because the culture at large infantilizes most people.
Yeah, and people accept to be infantilized.
I'm reminded of the case of the school teacher who had a relationship with one of her high school students, a boy. And so it was this weird thing of it being sort of, you know, it's usually the man, professor, and a girl. In this case, it was the other way around. So there was a different dialogue happening. And she actually, what happened with the relationship is she actually got the kid to kill her husband. So, and that's how it came to light was, you know. So out of this topic, this idea of grooming, I think it's one of the problems that has like erupted it with social media is this idea that we can take words that have a very specific meaning and apply them to other things, like this idea of grooming that is very much meant to be a longer term, you know, inappropriate relationship between children and adults. Whereas, you know, and I can't speak to specific circumstances because I don't know either Dr. Bones or this person. I can just assume that everybody's shitty until proven otherwise. But, It just sounds like there was infatuation, and because this word's floating around, someone can attach it to what they're feeling. And this person obviously felt that because they had this infatuation with Dr. Bones' writing, and not just him as a great person, that he sort of used that as like, you know, they talk about him like, oh, I love your work, I'm gonna get it published, and all this stuff. But none of that in and of itself is something to be like, you know, I mean, we do that with people, you know. So it just sounds like this person had a negative relationship experience, and I don't think it's appropriate to take words that have more, like, you know, people do with rape or people, and all of a sudden we now don't understand what it even means.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's fair to sort of say that there was a power differential, that she perhaps wanted one thing out of the relationship and he wanted something else. Mm-hmm. And as most romantic, especially early romantic relationships go, that's incredibly common. Mm-hmm. and because they never really had a real relationship, they had a affair. I think it's fair for her to use the term, but it's also fair for us to sort of say, I never knew the term grooming regarding sure. pedophilia. I mostly think of grooming in terms of like picking lice off of my close friends or perhaps combing a dog.
Very appropriate.
Right, but the leap from from combing a dog to what we're talking about relationship dynamics, that I'm totally lost when you go there. Like, that seems insane.
Well, that's when I think back into like my early experiences, which were horrifying. I didn't have words for it either. Mm-hmm. I didn't even consider what happened to me to be sexual assault because that sounded too dramatic right. with what happened, even though looking back on it, that's exactly what happened. So when you don't have these words for them, I think it's easier to deal with the situation on your own. I think from what I see online, it's more traumatic to take your experience when really you had a shitty relationship with a shitty person. I don't think giving it a name is just a way for people to get online and start the witch hunt, because
sure.
all people need to see is that one word.
Well, that word was buried a little later in the announcement. Mm-hmm. The initial tweet said, "This is the story of my affair," which that to me feels like okay. perfectly like, yeah,
sure.
that's what it
share
was.
Share what happened, yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
I mean, obviously, you can't publicly talk about anything in the 21st century and it not turn into a shitstorm, as far as I can tell, especially if it has to do with sex, because people basically love the controversy.
Well, within, yeah, with the I guess anything, yeah, everywhere. You show your dick pic and it's over.
Well, so separate from the conversation of whether or not something is grooming, do we take any lessons away from this particular controversy and from the way in which sort of it feels? I felt as though the thread and the response was a really conservative attitude towards sex.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
But that's because I've had a half dozen affairs in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I took a look in what was happening, even though, like, I feel like their relationship and, of course, some other people involved, because as far as I understood, it was not only about the two of them. But it's like, I think it's something they should resolve in a way, even if resolving is like, get out of my life forever and I don't want to see your face or talk, and I'm not going to say good things if anybody asks.
And I think that's what
yeah.
what her articulation was. Like, I want you out of my life.
Yes.
This is goodbye.
And this, for me, it's completely okay. But then you take it to you, like anybody, take something to the internet, and then it becomes suddenly everybody business. And I agree with you, the response is usually because people are afraid to hurt somebody or being accused, because if they need to say something, if you don't say something, it's like, oh, so you are protecting the offender, the so-called offender. And
I prefer perp.
What?
I prefer perp.
Perp?
Perpetrator.
Going old school.
Perpetrator.
Perp.
Okay. No, that's fine. It's because offender is the only word I know for this. So perpetrator. Now I learned a new word.
They both sound like cop logic is the whole point.
You know? Yeah. So you need to have an opinion about it, and people, as they are afraid to be accused with their opinion, so they choose the easiest path, that it's like preserving the, well, in our time, it's women are always right when there's a man and a woman, not necessarily sometimes, or like the younger or the minorities in general, the so-called minorities, yeah. Because as for women, it's half of the or more than the population, Okay, I'm joking. But yeah, minority in the sense of the power struggle. So then people are always on the side of the so-called minorities, and also like they don't think and they choose like, okay, so family people usually like it, kids people usually like it, and women people usually like it. So that's what I'm going to, and also marriage in general. So I'm going to stick it with this because it's safer. And there's not like a discussion about this thing of judging people or lynching people or not online, and thinking so our time is creating some kind of problem with relationships, because now people think it's safer for you to find somebody, I don't know, in Tinder? Because then, okay, so I have the consent. But like for me, this doesn't work as an example. I need to see the person and see like, okay, so if I touch the person here, will the person allow it? So yeah, the person might not like it and then I'll step away. And so, but there is, for me, it's part of trying to find out even if I like the person or not and if the person likes me. And suddenly you have this barrier that, okay, so let's do to internet, and then you go and you have nothing, no relationship with the person, no connection, and you're going to date or not. I think there's so many things to discuss about this, and people choose always the not to go deeper, but stay the safe response, well, usually conservative.
Well, I think we live in this culture of just everything's, all our information's so quick. We get all this information so quick. Like, I just call it this like bio culture, where you just look at someone's bio of like their 10 listed things, and, you know, somehow people think like that is the person. So I don't know if it's just, like I haven't dated in a long time. But you know, when I was dating online, it's just, I mean, it is a very, if you're going that direction with dating, don't be surprised to find some assholes is what I'm saying.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Rosinante. We thank Aragorn and friends for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked on ANews. I'm busy.